Welcome to Frame of Reference, informed, intelligent conversations about the issues and challenges facing everyone in today's world. In-depth interviews with Sauk County's leaders and professionals to help you expand and inform your frame of reference. Brought to you by the Max FM Digital Network. Now here's your host, Raoul Labrèche.
Well, welcome to another edition of Frame of Reference, Sauk County and Beyond. And I'm happy to say that today, sitting across the table from me, is a person that has been on this podcast a number of times. And it's interesting because whenever we have these discussions, I am aware both of the profundity of the problems that we're dealing with, and yet I am filled with a sense of hope that there is light at the end of the tunnel. And I'm talking about Kathy Lentz, who is the founder of an organization called Gather My Lost Sheep. Kathy has an extensive background in trauma, and the causes of trauma, the ways that people deal with trauma. And if you've listened to our episodes before talking about abuse and how, she came into this field of trauma, you know that she is a wealth of information in terms of recognizing our own traumas, finding ways to get beyond them to a healthier life. And probably most importantly, to getting to a healthy relationship with God. So Kathy, welcome. Thank you.
Thank you. And glad to be back here again talking about, and every time we come, there's like this new developments, new things to talk about and share on things that we're seeing out there as we're out in the field talking
Indeed.
With folks.
Indeed. And that's what's so exciting is it's like, okay, we haven't talked for about 6 months, so there's got to be something new going on with Kathy.
I'll call
Kathy in and she'll come talk. So and it'll be exciting as always. And speaking of new things, Kathy, you've been on the show a number of times now, and we know that you've been through my favorite thing segment. So I spent some time ahead of time coming up with some new favorites for you.
Okay.
So you're going to end up with something, hopefully, again, like normal, just whatever comes to mind is good. Doesn't matter. And I know I don't have to worry about you in any, explicit language or anything like that. So here we go. Without further ado, favorite song.
Favorite song. See, I'm a Tina Turner person, I love Tina and Rolling on the River, okay. If you want to know, and I have been known to break out into karaoke. It was a thing for one of my coworkers. My boss was like, if you want to make it in this crew, you got to sing karaoke.
Okay. So that's then your favorite musical artist would be Tina Turner then mm-hmm. as well. Okay.
Oh, but Rolling on the River, I got to love that. Okay. I mean, I love a lot of hers.
Okay. How about your favorite dog? Breed or your favorite cat, or you might even think about a favorite animal
that's
that you've
easy.
Had.
I'm always a terrier person.
Really?
All of my rescue dogs have been terriers. They've either been a fox terrier, a rat terrier, a Jack Russell terrier.
Okay.
So, and I was just looking at another one today that I was just like, well, that's an interesting terrier. I wonder, because Lucy is 14, not that I expect that she's going to,
but
you know,
14's
she's at
getting
that point.
There. Yeah, yeah.
Especially with rescue dogs.
Yeah,
especially
14, 15, dogs. 16. Yeah, I hear you. That's, we've had rescue dogs. Wow. Our first dog wasn't really a rescue dog, although he came to us out of the blue, just walked into the yard one day, and we ended up rescuing him. But I am so into rescue dogs because you kind of take what's there at the time, but they always end up being so appreciative of, how
they
much
just,
love
they know.
It. Yeah.
Well, because I've gotten quite a few that have gone through the shelter, and they're like, they didn't make it here. So then they found somebody who'd take them in as a foster home because they're like, if they can't make it here, we're running out of options.
Right.
So I'm like, okay, let's go. And, right. and it's funny, especially the last two, they were like, they wanted nothing to do with anyone else. But the minute you walked in, this is my person, I've decided. And they're like, well, you have been chosen.
Yes, yes. There's an old thing about we don't choose, we don't own dogs, dogs own us.
Mm-hmm.
So, which I fully believe.
Well, I always tell them, I said, I think they see the big S on my forehead that says sucker.
Yeah.
Like this one, I want to go with that one because she's going to spoil me rotten.
Totally, totally. Yeah, they get that. They have a sixth sense for that sort of thing. How about your favorite flower?
I would have to say the peonies. And I was so surprised that mine came up so early this year.
Yeah.
But I keep hoping because I keep buying what is supposed to be a red peonies. And mm-hmm. I'm like, okay, that is purple. That is not red.
Mm-hmm.
But I know that there are red ones out there, so I keep trying to get the red peonies.
Yeah, we have a long line of peonies on the side of our driveway when you come in by our house, and there's red and white and pink, and it's always – last year was such a horrible year because they came up fast, and then there were all these below-freezing nights. So I remember a couple of nights, my wife and I being out there, we're like, cover this one with a crate, put some fabric over it, you know.
And it's just anything to save them.
Oh, this year has been, thankfully, it looks like it's going to be okay. We had the one run, but now they're going okay. And they just, like the past couple of days with all the, you know, warm weather, they just like, you mm-hmm. know. I swear if we did time-lapse photography, it would just be like, so, which is, if you can't see me, I'm doing this big arm gesture, right, with things just
like
exploding.
The sound
yeah, yeah. I'm trying to give you a sense there with, you know, if you just imagine closer, whatever. How about, do you have a favorite movie or a favorite movie actor, actress?
Well, see, my favorite movie has always been When Harry Met Sally.
Oh, really?
Okay. I like that movie.
Billy Crystal. And,
yes, yeah, it's yeah. Meg Ryan.
I finally saw that movie not too long ago, and I finally kind of got why people love that so much. But, you know, I hadn't seen it until, gosh, it was just like a couple of years ago. But it's a wonderful movie. Just lots of fun, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the chemistry between those two?
It's just, you know, it's so natural, and so, but it's just – it's, I watch it again and again, and I'm like, I love this movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it kind of parallels, I think, a lot of our lives where we just don't really get things until we get to the point where we get things, right?
So it finally
like,
clicks.
Yeah, like, bing! So how about a favorite quote? Do you have a favorite quote?
The one that I came across that I really fell in love with, it says, you know, there was a physician who said, love, you know, is the medicine that people need. And someone said, well, what if it doesn't work? And he stopped and he thought for a second and he said, increase the dose. And I thought, yes,
increase
yes.
the dosage. Yep, there you go. Which is, yeah, why don't we? You know, but instead of saying, oh, I've given all I can give. I was like, well, that's not really love, I don't think.
Okay, you know? Let's try a little harder.
Yeah, exactly. So, is it now? Because your site, your Facebook page for Gather My Lost Sheep has quite a few quotes. I mean, do you look for specific things?
I have special ones. I track with different folks to look at what kind of things are out there, and so it just I have searched set it for searches for certain things because okay. I'm like, I want to keep that fresh and up. And I actually had someone who two people this week who messaged me who were like, I just love following what you post
yeah.
and the things you talk about and
yeah.
and you're honest.
Right.
I mean, you don't sugarcoat it. There's times where it's not pretty. Because
mm-hmm.
I'm like, if you're going to walk with people, you need to know what you're getting into.
Right.
You know, that's the reality. And yeah, there are going to be good days. And there are days where you're like, not
mm-hmm.
pretty.
Well, it's so easy to put on a facade and just – my dad used to hate it when he would ask people how they are and they would say fine. And he was fine. What is fine? I don't understand. Fine. Tell me what that is. Because he just didn't understand why people would want to hide behind a word as ambiguous as fine. And yet he did it himself too. How are you doing, Dad? Fine. So,
well, it's funny that you mentioned it because I have been doing some training on mental health first aid.
Okay.
And one of the exercises in there is how do we respond if someone says, I'm not doing very well.
Right.
And
right.
it was like this complete stop because they had literally interviewed people mm-hmm. who were not expecting that. They were
yeah.
like,
Right, right. It's like, uh-oh, you know. And there can be that little bit of a, I wasn't ready for that. And now I have to do something I'm told. So we almost want it to just be that surface thing. I think we do want it to be that surface thing a lot of time. It's just like the social thing you have to do is ask how people are. But it's like, please don't tell me.
But so, what was wonderful is by the time people finished that 8 hours of training,
mm-hmm.
they, again, people email me back and they're like, Kathy, I thought about it,
mm-hmm.
and someone, I asked them how they were doing it, and I could see they weren't fine.
Yeah.
And I asked questions, and mm-hmm. I just checked in more, and they finally talked about what was really going on, and
right.
then they thanked me profusely that someone took the time to listen. And I said, you know,
yeah.
I get it.
Yeah.
I remember the time that I was talking to one of the priests. He goes, so are you? And I said, so do you want the polite answer, or do you want the truth? And
right.
he, I mean, it stopped him cold, and he was like, What's the difference? I said, well, the polite answer would be this, mm-hmm. and the truth would be this. And he was like, oh. Let's talk.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
He goes, let's talk more about the truthful answer.
Sure. Which is a difficult thing, right? I mean, and yet I would posit that it is a device, I believe, of the enemy of our souls to make people believe a lie that if you ask and you really dig, it will be really draining on you, you know, and you have to have all kinds of resources in order to do that. And I'm not saying it doesn't take some resources because, obviously the more you have empathy for someone, the more you get drawn into things, that does take energy. But at the end of the day, too, doing that for someone, giving a higher and higher dosage of love has a return effect as well. Mm-hmm. So you may be exhausted, but it's kind of like, I think, the exhaustion of having done a good day's work. You know, you're like, you can look and see you got all that stuff done. It's like, boy, I'm tired, but man, that looks good. You know, I'm probably trivializing it, but you get what I mean.
I do. And the other side of that is, and there's always, this is actually feeds into exactly what we're talking about. And then there's that self-care that says, I've just put myself out. I may have run into somebody who really has something serious going on.
Right.
What am I now going to do to replenish myself?
Right.
I mean, that's literally what we're talking about in this particular work
right.
at this juncture.
Right. Okay. How about a favorite historical personality?
Ooh. Favorite historical? See, that's going to be Abraham Lincoln.
All right. Okay.
And that's mainly because I spent time as a field trip interpreter because, of course, you have to be licensed to be a tour guide, let us be clear. And as a field trip interpreter.
Not just for the meek of heart or whatnot, right?
Because I was working with the National 4-H Council at that point, and we would go regularly to the Lincoln Memorial. And as it was always that chance to really sit and think about what he was dealing with at that time,
okay.
the difficult choices that he had to make. And it was interesting, if you actually look at the sculpture, the person who created it, if you look from one side, you can see a happier time. And if you could look from the other, you can see it was a harder, sadder time,
really?
All in the same statue.
Okay. So he was able to give kind of the range of emotion almost. So.
When you think about the severity of what he mm-hmm. had to make choices about mm-hmm. to try to save the nation.
I remember the movie Lincoln can't think of his name. Those of you that are listening, you can tell me what the name is. Anyways, the actor that played him at one point, towards the very end, he's sitting on the porch at Appomattox with the actor who plays Grant, and Grant says something to him of, you appear older than the last time you remember, and he says something effective, yeah, the events of the day have weighed heavily on me, you know, and who can imagine, you know, I mean, that's just a I always say, you know, I don't care who you are. I would not want to be president of the United States, especially right now. So, especially right now. How about a favorite comfort food?
That would be strawberry shortcake.
Ooh, strawberry shortcake.
Like except that it's harder to find a little bit. One of the berry places just announced that they're not going to be doing berries this year.
Really?
So it's almost time.
Why?
I don't know. They're just sticking to their blueberries at this point, but I don't know if it's too hard to find the workers. I'm not really sure.
Interesting.
But I was just like,
So strawberry shortcake could be a high demand item. It's going to be like oil, for God's sake, barrels of oil. Oh my Lord! Yeah, quarts of strawberries, $18.95. So, how about, and this will be your last one?
Okay.
How about the favorite quality or the thing that when you meet somebody with this quality, you think to yourself, I want to be their friend? So it's like a favorite quality you look for in people that you want to be friends with.
Willingness to try new things.
Okay.
And to put out into the deep a little bit more.
Okay.
So, and say, you know, not just because that's what we've always done. I like quirky. I get that. I like quirky. But I appreciate people who are willing to try things
sure.
that are out of the norm.
Sure. I talked with Jeff Wright, our superintendent here, a couple weeks back, and he was talking about how one of his students really taught him about, you know, take chances. Why not? You know, be bold. You never know until you try something, right? If it's going to happen. Be bold. I think there's a song about that. Be bold. Be strong. And, you know, for the Lord God is with thee. You know, it's just like one of those things where you're like, yeah, why not? You know, and how many times do you meet people that wish they would have, right?
I don't want to have that regret. I mean, that was the thing that when I was younger, I went on exchange as a high school student to Spain. I then went as an international 4-H youth exchange participant for 6 months to Central America. Okay. My family was convinced I would die. I would be killed. I mean, I worked at the National 4-H Center in Washington, D.C., and my father tried to convince me that I would not live through the summer. I would be killed for sure.
And actually you were, but you continued on. You've been resurrected and continue on right there.
But you know, but I got in my car. I drove out there. I went. And I just remember my aunt or my grandmother, who was like terrified of me going, and then her poring over the pictures and looking at me going, I wish I had done that when I was younger. And I thought, you know, I don't want to be later in life and wish I had done it.
Right. Taking advantage of those opportunities. Yeah. Grabbing a hold of life by the teeth and doing what you need. Carpe diem, right? Carpe diem.
Even if it scares me.
Exactly. Well, and probably especially mostly if it scares you. Right. So, folks, my guest today is Kathy Linz, the founder or originator of Gather My Lost Sheep, an organization that is designed to help people that have experienced trauma, to help them kind of recover from that, right?
Our trauma-informed parishes. And we're really trying to work with churches to say, let's talk about how we can be welcoming and how we can be places of healing for folks. And the RAIN people are always like, well, why are you doing this? Mm-hmm. Why? Mm-hmm. Because I went to speak to a state conference for people living with mental health challenges.
Okay.
And I was supposed to talk about peer support. And I said, you know, one of the first places that the research says people turn for support are churches. And the next thing I knew, hands were going up. And the one gentleman said, I did exactly what you said. That's exactly where I went. And let me tell you how your Jesus people treated me.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh boy. And he wasn't the only one.
Uh-huh.
And I didn't have a positive story in the bunch to talk about how churches had treated them.
Boy.
And I thought, huh. I'm like, Lord, that was painful.
Yeah.
I'm sure there's a reason why you wanted me to see that, but that was painful. And the most fascinating thing happened afterwards. One of the participants came up and she said, I don't think you realize what you've just done. And I said, tell me. And she said, you just gave a whole lot of people a little bit of healing. She said, you didn't tell them. I'm sure that didn't happen.
Right.
Oh, well, yeah, I don't know what you think you heard, but that's not what they said, or that's not what they – and I'm like, sure, you didn't do any of that.
No.
You listened to them.
Right.
And I thought that's really the key here of what we need to be doing. And then I have to have conversations sometimes with some of the church, particularly some of the clergy, to say I've noticed that sometimes when people start to talk about the church is this, the church is that, God is this, God is – y'all don't want to hear that. And you go into defensive mode.
Right.
And you're never going to win them over. And if you give them the chance to just talk, my collaborator, Father Mark Capizzi and Father John Lennis, Father Mark said to me, Kathy, they have to let the venom out. If you let them talk and work it through and you listen, you now have a possible bridge of trust. Have a conversation.
Right. You got to lance the wound, right?
Mm-hmm.
So
they get a chance to talk about it.
There you go. So, well, folks, we're going to talk about that and so much more. If you'll just hang with us after this brief break, we'll take to hear a word from our sponsors here on Frame of Reference and 99.7 Max FM. Don't go away.
Now,
if you've got pets, there's a strong probability that they are hungry critters and your pet has a way of knowing when it's time to eat. That's right, Buster. McFarland's does have more pet toys and food than you can shake a stick at. Yes, Lightning. Thank you. As well as nutritional supplements for horses, cattle, sheep, rabbits, and chickens. Of course I was going to tell them about the address. Sheesh! McFarland, 780 Carolina Street, one block south of Highway 12, where service is a family tradition. And we're back here on Frame of Reference, Sauk County's only, yes, that's right, we're going with only show that talks with leaders and movers and shakers from around Sauk County that have messages for the world, really. And my guest today is someone that certainly has that, because her experience has been all over the nation, that the things she has dedicated her life to, the kind of work she's dedicated her life to, certainly shows up in all corners of the earth and all populations. So Kathy Lentz is here with me, who's the founder of Gather My Lost Sheep, which, Kathy, tell me about Gather My Lost Sheep. Where did that organization, the idea for that come from? How did you start that?
I was talking earlier about, you know, I had spoken for a mental health conference, and I would literally like, Lord, what is it that you call us to? And it was like, gather my lost sheep, go. And I'm like, oh, okay. So I called two of my priest friends and I said, listen, here's what we want to do. Let's talk about like, how would this go? And, and they were, you know, at first it was like trying to decide if that's something they wanted to do. And I'm like, well, Lord, what would you have us do? And it was like trauma-informed parishes. I'm like, okay. You're writing a book. Like, got it. So I have been starting that process and working with a publisher and making that actually come to fruition, which is an exciting thing to be working on.
Sure.
I've actually gotten two short chapters in some other books as well. I'm like, a published author is a whole different ballgame. But I'm like, okay, Lord, if that's what you call. But it was that chance to actually bring that to fruition. And so we've been going out and doing trainings. And it's been a fascinating process. I was up in one of the other dioceses here in the Wisconsin area, and I got to talk a little bit more about trauma and the six core areas that we need to be looking at for the safety in particular, overall. And it was so interesting who showed up, because I had some people who live with trauma who were like, you have no idea how nice it is to finally have someone in the church who gets this, who knows what I'm talking about. Because they're like, I run into so many people who are just, they don't get it. To have other people who came because they were intrigued, and as they were looking at the different types of trauma, came back to me and said, Kathy, I think I may have unresolved trauma. I've experienced those things. And I behave the way that you're talking about. I just never thought about that. As well as people, I had a couple of members of the clergy who came to me and said, I realized I've hurt people. I didn't mean to. I really didn't think about what it was I was saying and why they were experiencing what they were. And now that I get it, I want to do a lot better. As well as just ministry folks who work with prisons, who work with, you know, lots of different groups who are just like, Kathy, there's so much trauma in the world. And now that you say it, it becomes so much clearer how widespread this really is. You know, so for them, it gave them some examples, concrete things to think about. What would that mean? How does it, what does it look like? And that was the thing that the gentleman who's in charge of parish evangelization, he said, Kathy, it is now clear to me that healing is the path of evangelization. He said, it's also clear to me that we have a lot of clergy who have unresolved trauma, who either because they came into this and never got it dealt with, and now it's showing up in spades, or just in the process of hearing what they hear on a regular basis, they've got vicarious, they've got secondary, they've got burnout, they've got all of these compassion fatigue, all these indirect traumas that, you know, are now coming to play.
When you think of just having friends of mine that are psychologists, counselors now, and the amount of compassion fatigue that the general population feels having been through COVID. I think of like, you know, just recently that shooting debacle up in Buffalo, you know, all those people that were just going to get groceries. You know, how do you deal with the trauma of going into a grocery store again, having that in your memory, you know, for the rest of your life, right? And, you know, not everyone has that degree necessarily, but the cumulative effect of traumas, I think, is part of what you're alluding to.
And I think it's even helpful to just clarify, because when I say compassion fatigue, what they're pointing to is they've been exposed to it, they've been hearing about it, and they have actually gotten to the point where they have a reduced capacity to empathize. Just like, I just can't even deal with this anymore. And there's a overwhelmed sense, and there's just this sense of anger mm-hmm. at some of the people that they're supposed to be working with. And, right. you know, because that, and that's very different than, say, vicarious trauma, where, you know, because of that continual stress that's been going on, what they've been experienced to, they also have that changed sense of the world, that the world is not safe. Their belief system starts to become very similar to the people that they're actually trying to help.
Yeah, when you see that kind of ugliness over and over and over and have to deal with the fact that this happened, this horrible thing that I've never experienced, but this person did, that's awful. That should never happen. That sort of rude awakening, constant rude awakening that the world is an ugly place mm-hmm. makes it really hard to find hope, right? Mm-hmm. To find a way to, that there's ways out of these things.
And they're like, well, what do we do at that point?
Right.
And that's because people are like, well, is secondary trauma different than vicarious? And like, actually a little bit, because for people who've experienced secondary trauma, they have symptoms almost the same as people who have PTSD. So they're starting to do the re-experiencing, the avoiding certain situations, the hyperarousal and reaction to someone else's experience.
Sure.
And so you realize the different kinds of ways that this shows up in people's lives. And it becomes the question of, what are you doing to address that?
Sure.
And that's really where trauma-informed supervision came to be, because as they were really working on trying to create trauma-informed organizations, really working with the organizations to say, like, how are we creating this? Have we thought about how we create safety? Have we thought about, they were like, okay, that's great that we're trying to do this for the clientele, but what about for the people who work here? Like, where's right. the safety for them?
Right.
Where's what you're putting in place for them? And so it really became the, how are we creating a system of supervision so that we can really help our teams? And it's interesting because therapists have therapists.
Mm-hmm.
We don't think about that.
Yeah, they need them. Oh my gosh, if anyone needs them.
You know, and right. yet, therapists could be terrible about doing their own self-care.
Yeah, I'm a therapist. I'm not supposed to need care, right?
So, but you'll hear that same thing from priests
yeah.
and from the other clergy members. And, yeah. you know, some of the other, they're like, well, I wouldn't need, I don't take care of. And I was telling people, I said, you know, when I was doing coaching for Catholic Leadership Institute, so I'm talking to bishops, I'm talking to priests, and we're talking about how you be a leader in your parish. And we come up to the section of self-care, and they're like, oh, you know, when I actually have time for that, I will get back to that. And I'm like, yeah, how's that working out for you?
Oh, my Lord. Don't make me laugh so hard. Yeah.
But it's one of those times. And I said to one of the bishops, I literally was just saying to one of the bishops, here's the thing. There are more and more people who've experienced trauma. There were 70% of people who've experienced trauma before COVID hit.
Mm-hmm.
It's bigger now.
Right.
And there's more people who are having the experience of the PTSD at this juncture.
Right.
You can't have your priests out trying to support people and not have a plan for themselves for care.
Right. Does it seem to you, I wonder if so many of us almost walk around in a, I think of it almost like Novocaine state, you know, where we've deadened ourselves to things enough so that we kind of go through the motions of it without really dealing with those things that are painful or those things that are difficult.
I believe they call that disassociation.
Yeah. I mean, it does. It seems like there's just kind of, I mean, sometimes it seems like people just don't have the capacity.
The bandwidth.
To, you know, and to feel emotions to the depth that even joy. I mean, it's hard, I think, to experience joy to its, you know, full potential if you can, you know, experience sadness to its.
Well, right? And that's literally what people, that's part of the reason that people who have experienced trauma have such a hard time. They're so desperate to not feel the pain that they've shut that emotion down, sure. not aware that when you shut that emotion down, you're not just shutting down the pain, you're shutting down the joy that you're talking about.
Right. Right.
And I'm like, that's a big, heavy price to pay
yeah.
to not have access to that.
Right.
That is, and when you think about the Christian life, it's like, well, of course there's joy. And it's like, not if you've shut it down, there isn't.
Right, right. Not if you've turned your back on the thing that will enable you to really experience it, right? So you've talked about a little bit here the self-care practice.
But see, here's the thing is we need to have individuals have an idea of what they want to do for self-care.
Okay.
But we need to have team members and supervisors who are also intentionally checking in as a part of what they do for supervision to say, so how's it going? So give me some feedback. Tell me a little bit about how things are going.
Right.
And we have had so many priests who have been sent out by themselves to make it work. And I think that's probably true for other clergy as well. Where who else is it that they're working in community with? Mm-hmm. So it's intentionally having priests group, other clergy groups, so that you actually have people that you can actually touch base with. So it's thinking about the self-care. It's thinking about, is there an app where I can see, like, how am I doing? How's my mood? There are actually apps for therapists, and you, anybody else could use them too, that say, you know, how would you answer these questions? Mm-hmm. You just may want to know that that's kind of tickling right. a few of the things that maybe you want to kind of get in check and check on yourself on.
I'm a big Star Trek fan. I remember one of the beginning scenes in The Search for Spock. Spock has been, you know, restored to his physical self, but he's training his mind. And so he's got these three computers in front of him that are asking him all these wild questions about philosophy and, you know, advanced quantum physics or whatnot. And one of the machines all of a sudden says, how do you feel? And he's like, I don't understand the question. It says, how do you feel? And so he's just like, I have no, you know, you're just completely stymied. And his mother, who's half human, says, Spock, you're, you know, Vulcan, but you're also half human. You need to understand your feelings. He's like, but they're irrelevant. And it's like, yeah, no, they're really not, Spock. And he learns that over the course of the year. But I think sometimes too, Microsoft Viva, wonderful program for checking in your daily, you know, stuff and kind of giving you your briefing of what projects are out there. It'll check in with me daily and say, how are you feeling? So I'm always like, I don't know if I want to tell a computer how I'm feeling, but it's just to log, you know, so you can kind of see where.
And imagine
where
you're if we had more of our priests actually utilizing that.
Right. And wanting to actually not just ask it, but building in the time to actually hear the answer and to take it where it may go. Right. Mm-hmm. So.
And thinking about, like, what kind of things are you doing to recharge yourself?
Right.
Where's that creativity opportunity for you? Because so often they're like, I have to serve. I have to serve. I have to serve. It's like, and dead priests don't serve anyone. I don't right. know. I don't just right. want to point that out, right. you know? So.
Right. Well, and how are you going to serve if you don't have any resources to mm-hmm. serve with, right? You know, and I think of the number of people that don't want to take time for themselves, you know, or they don't find something that they just enjoy doing. And we spend so much time in front of the television, you know, catching up on whatever. And that's relaxing to some extent, right? But, you know, how many couch potatoes do you know that have completely unresolved trauma in their life because they've just allowed themselves to escape it constantly, right?
And go there. And let's hear it say the other part. How much of it is stigma? Because we wouldn't want to admit that we might have a mental health challenge.
Right, right.
Because that's that big fear of, like, well, if I have that, then only crazy right. people go to, you know, right. therapists. And it's right. like, really? I want you just to really hear
right.
the thought process that's going through your head right now.
Right. No, it's the crazy people that don't go to therapy. Those are the ones you worry about.
And as they always say, people who go to therapy go there to deal with the people who really need to go.
Yeah. There's some real truth to that, unfortunately. Well, you know, and we talk about that. When I train people here at McFarland's, one of the first discussions we have in onboarding is to recognize the stresses that agricultural business people are under. You know, and they talk about anxiety disorders and depression and suicide being three really prevalent things in the ag business. And, you know, it's interesting because we one of the things I have to always address is, you know, if your arm was broken – and you didn't get it set in the cast, people would wonder what the heck is wrong with you. Your brain, which is completely different in a lot of ways, but is still an organ in our bodies and is infinitely more complex than an arm, that can be broken in all kinds of ways. And you got to get over it. You got to deal with it. A real man doesn't have those feelings, whatever the excuse may be. And we've got to get past the point where we think of it as being crazy and just understand that, yeah, I got a problem. That makes sense. I've had some issues. I've had some traumas. I've had some difficult things I've had to deal with. And yeah, my brain's struggling to kind of build the new pathways to deal with that and cope with it, right? Why is that such a stigma? Why is it so hard for people to come to grips with that and just say, I need help. I need help. Mm-hmm. What do you see in people that keeps them from asking for that help?
That's the what will people think?
Yeah.
Will this keep me from being promoted but from being considered for other things if I need to get that help? And I think the brightest spot in all of this I've seen is once in a while we've had a couple of our bishops who've actually come out and said, I actually need to take a leave right now because I need to take care of my own mental health.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that gives the rest of their members and the people that they oversee, the flock of their priests, the brotherhood, permission to admit mm-hmm. that maybe I need some help.
Okay.
Because this has all been very isolating to go through COVID. It's been hard on a lot of people.
Yeah.
And so it's that when you think about how many funerals that people went through where families couldn't be there, they couldn't, right. they suffered alone
right.
without the support network that they normally would have had.
Right.
And
the guilt that you feel having not been able to be there and, you know, the number of people that are gone that we never got to say goodbye to that were important parts of our life.
Well, people who couldn't go to the hospital right. with their loved ones.
Right, right. Yeah, I fear there's going to be a lot of trauma for a lot of years. And if we don't come up with some way of experiencing it or, you know, really bringing it to the surface and dealing with it, listening to one another, do you think there are, I don't know what to call them, maybe lies that we tell ourselves that keep us from listening?
You know, I think there's that part of them that says, I have to keep going. I have to be there for everyone else. I have to be, what if I'm not there, who will be there for them? And I'm like, again, this is where we need to bring other leaders in, other missionary disciples in. What if there was a whole team of us pulling together? Because not only do we need, literally, it's the, if we have our bishops on board with this, working with this, and then thinking about the different, like in the Diocese of Madison, we have 9 different vicariates.
Okay.
And there's one priest who's supposed to be keeping an eye on the other priests within their particular local area and kind of checking in with them as they sure. go and together with the Vicar General. And so it becomes the, what are we doing at that point so that those vicariate leaders know enough about supervision to really know what to watch for?
Sure.
What kind of behavior would we see? What kind of questions should we be asking? So that we, in fact, know how they're doing. And again, it goes right back to those same the 6 principles that we talked about when we first started this whole process, but becomes the, what are we doing to create safety for our staff? You know, if you've had someone who had a really difficult situation come in, do you have a space within your rectory, your office, your wherever, for the clergy, for the staff, so that they can just go and decompress?
Sure.
Is there someone else, a buddy system that we have so that you can call someone else? Not because we're going to share people's personal details. You know, we're going to be like, person X, I just need a chance to talk about this, and which is what therapists are doing too.
Sure.
So being able to listen for each other.
Sure.
Creating that up in a way, in a buddy system and officially within the diocese system so that people can be there to actually listen. So it's, what are we creating in our parish to do this with my own staff, with my own team, so that they're supported
mm-hmm.
and have someone to go to? And then as a priest, what am I doing within my vicariate? And then eventually, what am I doing within the diocese? And oh my gosh, here's a crazy idea. There's a metropolitan bishop for the Archdiocese of Milwaukee for the state of Wisconsin. So what are we doing to make sure that we've got these different dioceses have someone to go through at the Archdiocese?
Yeah.
Wherever the Cardinals are in next. And you know what? I think we're going for the guy in white. Let's go for the Pope.
Yeah.
You know, but what if we could be creating that all the way through?
Right.
Have the apps, the resources, the places that we could work with to bring this in.
Yeah.
Now, I told you I was I'm offline. I was working with the Archdiocese of Vancouver. It's a fascinating time to be working with them because they've got a priest who just got his PhD in theology, and I should say in counseling and psychology. And he said, I am so thrilled that you want to talk about trauma-informed supervision. I want to talk about how we create that structured throughout the diocese. That's part
right.
of what we're looking at.
Right.
They've got a team of about 20 counselors that are like, we want to work with you to say like how we're going to spread this out over all of our different, our 70 parishes
sure.
and what that would look like.
And, sure. Train you know, the so trainers.
Literally.
Yeah.
making that a possibility. Sure. So that's what's coming to fruition. So for them to see the vision of what we're talking about and looking then saying, we've got to do this.
Right.
Because they do know that they've been dealing with clergy abuse cases. They do know they've been dealing with the residential schools. And I don't know if you noticed, but the residential schools report for the United States just came out.
Right.
That becomes a whole nother area. And so when you think about literally culturally, everything that's going on, all the different, we've just got so many different factors. And I come back to, we don't need to be the land of the wounded. What if we were creating safe places for healing? Because if people could heal, they will thrive. So it really becomes the, I love the quote the other day that said, you know, if your flower isn't blooming, you don't beat up on the flower. You take a careful look at the environment and say, what do I need to do differently for this flower to bloom?
Yeah.
That's really what we're trying to create is blooming flowers.
What's that old joke? The Christian army is the only army in the world that shoots its wounded. So, which, you know, that speaks to your comment about the people in workshops that say, hey, you know, I went to my church and this is what happened. And, you know, those people that need to let some of that steam off, if you will, over the clergies, the churches, organizations.
The lay ministers.
Right. That should have known how to deal with it, but never were trained. And, you know, what training they did receive didn't give them the tools that you need to listen to someone that's hurting, because it's not pretty. You know, when people are just going on and on about their litany of misery, it's really easy just like, oh, God, I don't want to hear this anymore. You know, it's got to be your problem. It's got to be your fault somehow. And that just perpetuates the illness, right?
It just keeps it going. That's why I have loved that I encourage people for mental health first aid, because it actually gives you a step-by-step process of how do I assess? Mm-hmm. What am I looking for at this point?
Mm-hmm.
Are they in imminent danger at this point? Because that makes a difference in which direction. And if they're not, then what's the next thing? I'm going to listen.
Right.
That's one of the things I'm going to give information.
Right.
And give hope.
Right.
That's part of that. That we're actually thinking about, like, do they need to be connected to a professional? Some people do. Some people don't. If they do, what can I do to help them get connected?
Right.
What are the self-care things that they could be doing? That's also going to be part of the process. So literally, it's when you have those steps and you know that those are the steps that they go to. And again, I love the fact that it's not a linear program. It's the, okay, I just did this. Now I'm pretty sure one of these is going to be the thing that's most helpful right now. Here's what I'm going to go to. I've had had opportunity to work with several different people across various roles in the parish who are like, I am so thankful. I am so thankful because I now know what to say. You helped us practice what we would actually say for all these different scenarios. I feel like I can go out and I can make a difference. I can have these conversations.
Right. You can have that script ready to go.
They've thought about it.
Yeah. That's why I often use my theater background to say, you know, you don't just get up and do the play one day. You rehearse and you rehearse and you rehearse and you figure out where the problems are and you rehearse some more and you try ideas and then you rehearse some more. And then when it comes to be opening night, you're ready. But still the audience will do things that you didn't expect and you have to, you know, adapt to that
adjust
too.
Again.
Right, exactly. So,
well, and it was like, they're like, so we'll always do this perfectly. And I'm like, probably not because we're human.
Right.
And we'll make mistakes.
Right.
And that's what an apology is, a really good idea.
Yeah. And just, you know, understand that, give yourself permission to make mistakes and let them know transparently, yeah, you're right. I'm sorry.
That was a boneheaded thing I really said. Right?
Please forgive me for that one. I am human. So, folks, my guest is Kathy Lynn. She's the founder of Gather My Lost Sheep. We're going to take a break to hear a word from our sponsor. I'm going to wrap up this episode, and we'll come back next week and continue to talk about things like trauma-informed supervision. What does that look like? What is that? So please, if you're listening now, make sure you listen next week as well to hear more about how people are traumatized and what we can do when we recognize our trauma. Okay? Thanks, Kathy. We'll be right back here on Frame of Reference and 99.7 Max FM's digital network.
Big deals. There's never been a better time to support small businesses and save big with MaxFM Big Deals. Discount certificates from the MaxFM Big Deals store will save you up to 50% off retail every day of the week. Local restaurants and wineries, healthy living and spa services, gifts for the holidays, and a whole lot more. New deals are added weekly. Check it out now at MaxFMBigDeals.com. That's MaxFMBigDeals.com. Start shopping and start saving.
Trauma is such an ugly word. It immediately conjures up thoughts of horrible, life-changing events, catastrophes that fall upon us without warning, situations that are complex, emotional, and stressful. And then there's all the recovery and healing that adds to the ongoing impact and difficulty. We endure the trauma and its aftermath and either grow bitter because it just doesn't make any sense to us or seems unjust, or we use it to strengthen us in wisdom and compassion. What I find fascinating about Kathy's work is that she finds more and more that as she conducts workshops, that an increasingly large population of attendants report they see evidence of trauma in their own lives, often being surprised by how it impacts them and their behavior without any awareness. As our world becomes more complex and stressed, we are all faced more and more with the difficult events in our lives that have often been ignored or suppressed. We think we are or should be over them. And yet, how can we be without the tools we need to survive and thrive? I hope you can join us next week as we continue to explore more of those tools. It's worth the wait. Stay well.